Tax Update for Saturday, November the 18th, 2006. Welcome to Tax Update for Saturday, November the 18th, 2006. This week, a ringing in your ears, businesses and telephone tax refunds. The Tax Update podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research to confirm items raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast and this document may be reproduced freely so long as no fee is charged for the use of the document or the related podcast. Such a prohibited use will include using the podcast or document as part of a CPE presentation for which a fee is charged. The podcast is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. Lineberg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters, as well as access to a library of useful information to tax practitioners that subscribe to their services. Visit them on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. Well, this week the IRS has issued a follow-up to the earlier simplified procedures for individuals to claim the telephone excise tax refund. And so we're going to discuss these provisions and go through the IRS's question and answer as to how we are to handle this simplified filing provision. Now, if you wish, the materials for this, as always, are located on the show notes or in the show notes for the show. That is at the ezollers.libsyn.com website that hosts the show in general. If you look at the show for this week of November the 18th, you'll find a link to the materials. The materials have the IRS's news release dealing with this issue, as well as the question and answers that deal with the actual implementation of this tax the tax refund. Now, to remind you where we are, you may have forgotten how all this got started, or you may not be aware of the fact. But this has been a case that's been going on through the courts for many years, and the IRS has finally given up, and that was what got us to the point of this automated refund procedure. The issue had become that the tax code provided, the law provided for a long-distance excise tax, but the tax was to be based on long-distance charges that were based on distance and time. Well, the IRS, well back in an old revenue ruling, had taken the position that while, in fact, for this case, the initial issue involved ship-to-shore communications where the long-distance charge was based basically solely on time, not distance, the IRS took the position that even though it didn't meet the literal requirements of the law, clearly that must have been what Congress intended, and therefore continued to collect that tax. Well, at that time, it wasn't such a big deal because most long-distance charges still in the U.S. were based upon both distance and time. For most landlines and ship-to-shore communications was hardly a major, major market. So we didn't have much going there. That old ruling stood around. However, with all the changes in the telecommunications industries over the years, you probably now note that almost nobody pays a long-distance charge that is based on both time and distance. These days, many long-distance charges are based either solely on time or are based on a flat fee per month. Well, the IRS had continued to collect that tax, and a number of businesses started suing the IRS and getting refunds. In fact, the businesses continued to win significant cases against the IRS in different circuits. The IRS continued to litigate this because, in fact, there's a lot of money at stake in this refund, and so the IRS continued to litigate and try to get a court to go along with their ruling. Unfortunately, the Circuit Courts of Appeals came down unanimously on the side against the IRS. The IRS's only win in this case, if you look back at the history, came in one single district court case that didn't stand the appeal. So, essentially, the IRS continued to lose this case. Finally, they have given up. Well, they have stopped collecting the tax. In fact, they stopped collecting it in the middle of this year. But now the IRS needs to refund the uncollected taxes, at least for those periods for which the statute was still open. So, the IRS has come up with a simplified refund procedure. Now, an important thing to note right now, even if you go back and recompute your excise taxes and file a claim for refund at this instant, the IRS will disallow it. The IRS position is, at this moment, that you have to file the claim for refund on your 2006 return, or at least that's your initial opportunity is going to be on that return. And only after you filed your 2006 return will they start considering or processing standalone claims for refund. The idea being that they're basically going to reject anything you send them now. You file it with your 2006 return. That return, you get your refund, or if you did not claim it on that return, then you file the claim for refund procedure. Well, for individuals, the IRS issued an announcement back much earlier this year when the IRS issued a set of questions and answers and an announcement that individuals would be given an automatic amount of refund if, in fact, they did not go back and recompute the entire balance. In that situation, the IRS provided that individuals with one exemption would get a refund amount of $30, two exemptions $40, three exemptions $50, and four more exemptions, they get $60 as a refund. Alternatively, you could file a Form 8913, that will be the new credit form for it on your return this year, add up your total excise taxes and claim the actual refund. For most clients, let's be honest, it's not going to be worth the work to go back and look up all that history, or it's not going to be worth the work to have us prepare the forms to handle all that history. So therefore, for most individual clients, we had 30 to 60. However, when the IRS issued that original announcement this past summer, the IRS did not come down and said initially, well, for businesses, we don't have a simplified method as of now. So for the moment, businesses would have to go back, get all of their old invoices, add up the excise tax applicable to the long distance charges, and then file the specific claim for refund based on that. The IRS did note, though, at the time that they were considering coming down with a system to be used for businesses where the businesses could automatically get a refund based upon a simplified procedure. In this particular case now, we're going to take a look at the IRS's current question and answer sheet and what was going on with regard to their new simplified method for businesses to file this claim for refund. Now, I should point out I'm recording this week from Norfolk, Virginia, actually from Virginia Beach, Virginia, the Founders Inn in Virginia Beach, recording it on Friday afternoon. In the middle of the conference, I have finished my presentations. I'm coming down here. I'm going to go down for the final presentation on an update, but in between all of that and after the lunch, I've gone ahead and run this week's recording. So hopefully we'll get all this up and you'll have it all available before I leave Virginia Beach, and it'll be up and on its regular time on the server. But if it's not, then at least you know why it got delayed. I'm here recording it in Virginia Beach, Virginia, kind of on the road, working my distance. Now, we have the telephone tax refunds. Now, the IRS specifically came out this week on the 16th of November and said that businesses will not have to necessarily come up with all those details. As the IRS came down with a simplified method, rather than getting all 41 months involved, because actually if you go back, the catch is that this particular refund period goes from for services billed after February 28th of 2003 and before August 1st of 2006, August 1st, 2006 being when the IRS ceased collecting this tax, that you file your claim for that period. What the IRS says is businesses can instead only review their phone bills for 2 months. They have picked two representative months, and from that representative month pairing, the businesses will be able to compute a percentage. That percentage, subject to caps that are also available under the simplified method, in essence, you can be no more than certain percentages that we'll talk about, but they will compute the percentage and they'll take the applicable percentage times their total phone bills for those periods, and that percentage of the bill will be considered their refund, and they'll be able to apply for the refund on their business return for 2006. Now, what you do, this is an alternative to basing a refund based on the actual amount of tax paid. You always can request the actual amount of tax paid. And whichever form you use, you must use Form 8913, the new form for credit for federal telephone excise tax paid, to request the refund. A business will attach the form to a regular income tax return for 2006. A tax exempt will attach it to a 990T. What that seems to mean is even if your tax exempt does not need to file a 990T, it still will have to file one for this purpose to claim the refund. Now, eligible to use this formula are businesses in general. The businesses that will be eligible to use it are those that were operated at any time from March 1, 2003 through July 31, 2006, and continued to incur phone expenses from April through September of 2006. Why is that important? Because obviously our two comparison months are going to come up here. There'll be the April and September bills, so you have to have basically had phone service going on during that period. Entities that can use this method will be corporations, S-corporations, partnerships, trusts, and estates. Trusts and estates will be treated as businesses and not individuals in applying this formula. Nonprofit tax-exempt organizations, which will include churches and charities, can also use the formula. In addition, individuals may be able to use the formula-based methods if they're owners of rental property or self-employed. That includes, as the IRS notes in their fact document, independent contractors, sole proprietors, and farmers. But those individuals must have shown gross rental and business income totaling more than $25,000 on their 2006 federal income tax return. Now, the IRS lists in their fact statement the lines we're going to be looking at here. 25,000 number is going to be measured by what's reported on line 7 of Schedule C this year for an individual, or line 1 of Schedule CEZ. If we're talking about rental income, it's going to be Schedule E line 3, presumably, you know, the gross rents from all rentals, or gross income on line 11, Schedule F. That is the line that can be used for those purposes. If you have more than one activity, should total together all gross rental and business income shown on those schedules and then figure out if they're over the $25,000. Also noted, if a married couple combines both spouses' rental or business income to come over the $25,000 limitation. Now, the IRS then goes on to describe in this notice how the formula works. And what they suggest to do is you take your April 2006 phone bill, and they clarify this to mean the bill with an April 2006 statement date, and divide the total federal telephone excise tax on the phone bill, including by the total phone bill, which includes the federal telephone excise tax, to arrive at a percentage of the bill attributable to the federal telephone excise tax. If you have more than one type of service, basically you combine all the bills. So if you have a landline, you have a cell phone, you have a fax machine, you have local, long distance, all kinds of structures, combine all of your phone bills, take all of the excise taxes reported on those bills, and that will be your ratio. You don't need to separate taxes paid on long distance from those paid on local service. That'll become obvious when we go to the next step, because how we're going to get this is a differential. What was imposed in September was only the local service excise tax. Therefore, that's what the IRS is aiming for. The IRS notes that April is a, as they call it, representative month during which the government was still collecting the excise tax on long distance service. Important to note, that is the representative month. There is no option under this alternative method of using a different representative month. In essence, if for some reason you did not have phone service in April of 2006, you can't use a different month in question. Then secondly, you take the September 2006 phone bill and divide the total federal excise tax by that total phone bill to arrive at the percentage of that bill attributable to federal excise tax. As noted, what this is going to give us is the local tax, basically local service percentage federal excise tax. That tax is still valid and still being collected. You would subtract the September percentage from the April percentage, and you're going to get your override percentage on the long distance tax. That's the percentage that the businesses and tax exempts are going to use to figure the refund, subject to a tax. Doubt that will be discussed later in the question and answer session list that we have. Now, what you do at this point is multiply that percentage you just computed by the total phone expenses shown on your telephone bills that were dated after February 28th of 2003 and before August 1st of 2006. Now, there is a cap that is based on the number of employees that you reported on your Form 941 for the second calendar quarter of this year. If your business reported 250 or fewer employees, the cap is 2% of phone expenses. If you reported more than 250 employees, your cap is 1%. Note, this cap applies only for the purpose of the simplified computation. So if you in fact discover that your excise tax were greater, or you suspect was significantly greater than the caps, you still have the option of going back and adding up your total bills. You can use the formula, as the IRS notes, even if the organization only operated for a portion of the 41 months. However, the portion of the 41 months it operated for has to include April and September. If you're not in business or operating April through September 2006, you cannot use the formula. You can only request, as noted, a refund for months for which telephone tax was paid. So basically, entities that started up during that period, because we would presume at this point somebody in business in the September 2006 is probably still in business today, those entities most likely that can get the shorter periods of those that started up. Those that shut down are not going to most likely, unless their shutdown just recently took place, are not going to be able to make use of this particular provision to compute a simplified refund. There is no other option available, no other method given for coming up with the simplified computation. Now, there are some questions they go on. The IRS first question they deal with is that an individual says, I qualify to use the formula, but my expense records are not broken down by month. Basically, is it acceptable to estimate the telephone expenses for the 41-month period? And the IRS comes down and says an answer that some might find surprising, but reasonably says you can use a reasonable estimation period or reasonable estimation method for computing what your telephone expense will be if you don't have the monthly breakdown. As should be key, the major problem is going to be the year 2003 and the years 2006 if there were not monthly breakdowns there, because those are the cutoff months. 2004 and 2005, the entire phone expense would be in the mix. For that, in that reason, you would prorate, most likely prorate down by months, or as they note, showing months to do that. It also says, note, for reporting purposes, telephone taxes need to be allocated by month or quarter. So they said, see the instructions to the 8913 for more information. We presume you can reasonably estimate those numbers. The next question was, what about if your employees were more than 250 for part of 2006 and less for other parts of it? And the IRS said the cap is determined based upon the employees for that June 12, 2006 pay period. That's the key. If you had more than 250 employees on that date, your cap is 1%. If you have less than 250 employees on that date, your cap is 2%. That's the test. It may be arbitrary and end up being unfair, but the IRS argument almost certainly is going to be, well, look, we're giving you a break. We're allowing you to use this. You're not forced to use this method. You can use actual expenses if you wish, but this is the catch. It does note that part-time employees are the same as full-time. Again, all they're looking for is that number on that 941. If an employee's counted that number on the Form 941, they count toward the 250. Now, the IRS does give an example of how the formula works in the question and answer document. And that example comes down and talks about a company that had 10 employees during the pay period ended June 12th. That makes them a 2% limitation entity. And they had telephone expenses for $40,000 for that 41-month period that began after February 28, 2003, basically March 2003, and ends before August of 2006, basically through July of 2006. Its phone bill dated April 5, 2006 was $1,000 and included an excise tax of $28. And the bill dated September 5, 2006 was $1,100, which includes an excise tax of $16.50. The April percentage is 2.8%, or $28 divided by 1,000. The September percentage is 1.5%, $16.50 divided by 1,100. When you subtract the 1.5 from the 2.8, that gives you a long distance percentage of 1.3. Now, as noted, because we're a small business and we have the 2% cap, we don't need to worry about the 1% cap had we been larger, so our number is really going to be the 1.3% number. We multiply that by the $40,000 of expenses incurred during the total period, and that gives us a refund of $520. The IRS notes that interest will be added to the refund amount. The amount that will be refunded will include interest. If Company Z had had more than 250 employees, then the 1% cap would have come in play. The fact it computed up to 1.3 is nice, but of no good. Then their refund would be $400 under the formula. As I note, you still have the option to go back and add up the real taxes, so you could still file a claim based on the actual excise tax paid on the long-distance bill. If you have the long-distance excise tax for the whole 41-month period, you could file for that instead of the 1.1% cap, or even, in the previous case, instead of the 1.3% amount computed for the small business, you can compute the real amount. Now, no additional forms are going to be required. If you use the formula or not, you're still going to use the form 8913 to claim the credit. So there's no different form for those using the formula versus those who don't. The IRS also makes clear you're not required to use the formula. The formula is an option for a business to use. Now, the IRS then answers a question, do they plan to audit telephone tax refund requests? Well, the answer to this one is somewhat what you'd expect. We don't expect the IRS to say carte blanche, whatever number you put down here we'll accept no matter what. Nor is the IRS going to obviously be able to audit every one of these. That's also a piece of reality, and they come down and state that. In fact, they note that they accept most federal tax returns as filed. However, to make sure tax returns are following the law, or taxpayers are following the law, they're going to examine or audit some return. The IRS goes on to note that returns are audited for a variety of reasons, and most are chosen by computerized screening. I don't know if that's kind of a backdoor way of warning. If you claim a really huge number, we're probably going to want to look at you, but they will do some computerized screening or cross-checking to try to make sure what they can. They said, in the case of an audit, which records are they going to likely be needing to look at? And the IRS suggests that taxpayers need to keep the following records, those who are using the formula. You will need to keep copies of the phone bills for April and September, the two involved computing this. You're going to need to have documentation of your business-related telephone expenses for the 41 months for which that refund is available, March 2003 through July 2006. And you're going to need to keep documentation to support the claim of the number of employees you reported during the pay period that included June 12th. So you need to be able to show whether your numbers were more or less than 250. I would presume, to be quite honest, they're not likely to question much if they're more than 250. They're probably not going to have worry about the documentation there if you reported above that. It's mainly those who report below that level. And to be quite honest, those who report right just at or below the 250 who are going to need the best documentation of the number of employees they had at that date. The IRS notes that if your refund is based on the actual amount you paid, then you need to keep all 41 months worth of records. Basically, we're going to need to be able to prove the excise tax for each of the 41 months. The IRS does not want to see these documents come in with the refund request. Rather, you keep them in your file. And, as should be clear, you would hold them for the period for which the statute would be open and during the period in which the IRS could examine the return. The IRS clarifies that foreign businesses and tax-exempt organizations both are eligible to request the refund. As long as they paid long-distance taxes billed during that period, both foreign businesses and tax-exempts are eligible to get the refund. The IRS also makes clear you can't switch during the period in question. It's either all of your refund will be based on the formula or all of your refund will be based on actual expenses. You cannot say, well, I want to use actual expenses for 2004, but I want to use the formula for 2005 and 2006. That's not an option that's allowed. The IRS answers the question about if a taxpayer has more than one business, do you submit a separate refund request for each business? And the IRS in that case says it's going to depend, and essentially it's going to depend upon the number of employer identification numbers. If a business has a separate EIN, essentially it needs to file a separate request for refund. So, and in that case, each of those businesses can separately elect whether they're going to use the refund method by asking for the money to, by the refund method by formula or the refund method by actually asking for a refund of the actual taxes that were paid. Individuals that operate more than one business as sole proprietor issued only a single EIN, the IRS's note, thus the individual can submit only one refund request. The IRS clarified that they can use the tax, telephone tax refund to offset tax debts. That's probably also not terribly surprising. And points out that this is probably going to be taxable income to you because most likely the telephone expense was deducted as business expense. Considering that happened, therefore the refund is going to be income in the year received. Now, the IRS gives some information about why the telephone companies can't do this payment. There was a lot of discussion in that regard. You know, why in the world are we having to file for this? They explained that most of the providers lack easy access to the records for that whole 41 months. Some taxpayers have been with more than one service provider. So for those reasons, it was not decided not to try to go backdoor through the service, through the telephone service providers. As well, the IRS notes they don't have the information to determine what your refund should be based on their record, so they can't be the one to do it. Essentially, the IRS comes down and says the person who will have the easiest time coming up with the number to refund is the taxpayer or the business owner themselves. Therefore, that's who has to do it. The forms, the IRS notes, will be available, and there will be information on the telephone tax refund in all 2006 return materials, as well information will be available on the IRS.gov website. Now, we talk about if business tax exempt organization does not have 41 months of documentation, what are its options? Well, the IRS notes, if you have the April and September 2006 records, you're still going to be in good shape as long as you can document the telephone expense. You know, instead will be there. So essentially, as they said, if a business tax organization has its expenses broken out by month, then all it has to do is add together in the group shown in the form 8913 and can estimate those expenses if it doesn't have them broken down by months. So it can work on those things to estimate. In essence, it appears the IRS is going to be relatively generous in determining what you can do to qualify for this refund. Now, one problem we've got, we're going to be filing 2006 returns here very shortly. We are currently sitting here in November, now past mid-November. Obviously, 2006 tax years are going to start closing starting December 31st, and income tax returns for business entities will begin to be filed early part of next year. We will need to communicate to clients the records they're going to need to get. In fact, right now, we probably need to start communicating the need to get those April and September bills, or if they happen to believe that's not going to generate enough of a refund, or they should get a much larger refund, then to get the total detail together to go forward. But we will need to communicate this to our clients and educate them on what they need to do to move forward in this area. Now, as I note, I just finished up doing the second presentation for the Virginia Accounting and Auditing Conference. This is the conference that goes once in Roanoke in September, goes here in the Virginia Beach, Norfolk area in November of each year. And I just finished up my secondary presentation on technology and the tax practice. We discussed the release of Vista and did a little more about the use of third-party networks that's similar to a podcast that I did a while back talking about what can be intercepted when you log on to any sort of unknown third-party network. Finished up those two presentations. My next on-the-road presentation's coming up. I'm actually getting to the home stretch here shortly. So I have one more big week of presentations coming up, at least if all the classes make, and I know at least two of the classes now have made in the state of Texas. I will be doing an advanced tax update the first week of December. The Monday of that first week, I'll be doing an update in Houston. Tuesday, I move on to Dallas and do a presentation. I should, at the moment, am scheduled to present in Missouri, though yet still awaiting confirmation that Missouri will go ahead and we will be going ahead doing those courses. If we do, I should be in Columbia, Missouri on the Thursday of that week, when I'll be presenting a practitioner's tax update course. And on Friday, I'll be doing a course that will deal with tax planning for the closely held corporation, or closely held business. That would be in Kansas City, Missouri on that week. The next presentations I have to make after that will come on December the 13th. That'll be two presentations at an Ohio Tech Business and Technology Conference, where I will do a presentation on management issues involving a CPA firm, and also a presentation on self-employment tax in the LLC. Interesting kind of odd combo of courses, but I'm doing both of those. And I'll be doing courses. I'm scheduled to do a course on partnerships and a course on S corporations in New York City after the beginning of the year. That'll be the first week of January to truly close down my presentation time. So my road trips are coming, one big one left, and then basically one quick one to get into Columbus. And after that, we close out after the year begins, and I do a final trip just before I get ready for tax season to get moving. So the fun is beginning to begin. Also, our firm now, we talked about the fact that we added a new partner. A partner is starting, which was a very good and upbeat thing. The other, now less upbeat thing happening is that we are having a longtime employee who has worked with us for the past 8 years, who has decided to go on, and she has other challenges she wants to take on and other issues in accounting she wants to deal with, and decided if she was ever going to do it, now is the time she has to do it. So Dawn Moore is going to be leaving our firm at the end of this week. We've enjoyed working with her. She is an excellent accountant, has been marvelous to work with, has certainly made all of our lives at our firm easier, and we're going to miss her and miss her greatly while she's not here, but we wish her the best of luck in her new endeavors. And Dawn, as I said, will be leaving our firm at the end of this week. This has been the Tax Update Podcast. The Tax Update Podcast, as always, is sponsored by Limeburg Information Services on the web at www.limeburgservices.com. Limeburg Information Services provides tax information of interest to tax practitioners who subscribe to their services. Be sure to visit them on the web at limeburgservices.com. This has been the Tax Update.